Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Hey, this is Dally, and you're listening to the Fear the Sword podcast.
Hello, and welcome to The Bottom, a Fear the Sword podcast. I am Chris Manning, the site manager over at Fear the Sword, and joining me today is my co-host and another writer over at Fear the Sword. It's David Zavok. David, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, not a whole lot. Just trying to get, we're going to Chicago this weekend, so trying to get a newborn ready to go to Chicago. My wife is a saint. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, it's in terms of the Cleveland sports team, which you're obviously a Cardinals fan. I couldn't tell you if the Cardinals are good or not this year. The Cleveland baseball team is in just a weird spot considering the Jose Ramirez injury, and then we're in a position now where the Cleveland Browns are playing the fourth preseason game, aka a game that I just was never going to watch. Like, there's just no point, you know? It's just, like, this really gets going next week when we're going to see how that team looks in week one. And the Cavs are getting closer and closer to media day. I'm going to guess we're about 3 weeks out. They're being a little coy about when media day actually is, even though we can sort of guess at that. The big news, I guess, we'll start with, and then we'll kind of get into what Dave and I are going to be doing for the next couple weeks, is the jerseys. They released their quote-unquote classic jersey this week. It's the throwback to the 90s, the black jersey with the orange, the old hoop logo. It's full on 90s. You've seen the pictures of Nance and Garland and then Love and Sexton's jerseys. David, this has just kind of been the dominant Cavs Twitter topic for about the last week. I personally love them. I didn't grow up with them because I was like not cognizant of watching the Cavs in the 90s because I was born in 93. But I'm in on these jerseys. I think they're just fun. I think they're sort of ugly, but they just sort of are just something about them I just find kind of endearing. I think they did a good job at least like updating the colors so they don't look quite as bad as they might have then. You know, I at least like them better than the orange and blue ones they had last year. I think just the overall look, they're just fun. I'm pro fun. Where are you at on these jerseys?
I like them a lot. They Adidas made them like during like the Kyrie era before LeBron came back, and I never got one, and I've always been sort of like a little mad at myself for not getting like a Kyrie version of it. Patrick Elder, who used to write for Fear the Sword, he always had one that made me very jealous. I'm a fan. The big thing that I started to notice was the people who are a little bit older than us, like, seem to just almost unanimously hate them. So I think it's because they just don't have positive memories sort of related to these jerseys. The team just wasn't particularly good when they had them. And then it's also like a very 90s, like, uniform, right? And I think they were probably over the top in the 90s, but now that we're sort of, you know, enjoying going back in time, they sort of have this new appeal. So, if you're trying to go back to that time period of the Cavs, not so great, but are they fun and exciting? I would say 100% yes.
Do you want to feel old?
Sure.
Darius Garland was born in 2000.
Yeah.
He was negative 7 years old when these jerseys were introduced.
Chris, when you're over the age of 30, everything makes you feel
Yeah, I mean, I'm getting close. I'm 4 years. I'm less than 4 years away from my 30s, and I eagerly await my old age. I'm like an 80-year-old spiritually anyway. If your life, like you know this, and we're kindred spirits, I think in that way. Okay, but I would just say, like, if the Cavs are ever gonna like do a jersey rebrand, and like I frankly think they need one, you just give me the Cavs logo with the, like, I don't really know if I care about the color per se, like if it's wine and gold or if it's blue and orange or whatever. I would probably have these 90 jerseys in my stable of four jerseys. I think I would go with that, but I think I would go with that Cavs logo with the net in them. Like, those are my favorite Cavs jerseys, particularly I think the wine and gold ones and the blue and orange ones they wore during LeBron's first tenure. Those are my favorite Cavs jerseys. If you want to have black in there because that's the color they won the title in, like I can get behind that, I guess, but those are my favorites. I like the 90s ones. I think they're just kind of fun, but I don't really, like, this is my favorite Cavs jersey, and I think that says more, right, of the ones they have right now. And I think for me, that says more about what I think of their other jerseys as opposed to what I think of the 90s jersey, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I don't really like any of the contemporary ones either. I do like the wine and gold jerseys in general, like jerseys that they wore before LeBron came back. I think most people didn't like them. I was actually a pretty big fan of them. I like calling the Cavs the wine and gold, so like I am sort of attached to those colors. I liked the 70s ones that they wore during like the 09 season, both like the yellow, the gold and wine ones, as well as those like blue and yellow ones. So I think I would sort of, the best ones I think are, you know, the ones that incorporate the wine and gold for me. But I think like objectively, you're right, like the best jerseys just period are those ones from the 80s with, you know, the V that was the hoop and, you know, that spelled out Cavs. So they have like good options. And I like these ones. I don't know that I like them on like a game-to-game basis, but you know, eight times a year, which is what they're going to do, I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, and I think in a season that's going to be a little funky, I think particularly good with it. You know, I don't think that's necessarily like a bad thing for us to be in that situation either. Okay, what Dave and I are going to do is run through some of the different things that we are going to kind of be looking at is the best case, worst case scenario for a variety of players. Our list today is going to start with the guards. The guards are not, obviously, all the guards, the Cavs have a crap ton of guards because that's just where we are at with this team right now. But we're going to do Sexton, Clarkson, Delly, and Brandon Knight today. David, I want you to pick off where we're going to start here. Who would you like us to get into best case, worst case first?
I guess Delly is probably the easiest way to start if that's where we're going.
Yeah, okay. So I would say for me, I think the best case for Delly is that if you want to go purely just how he plays, I think him being healthy, I'm very curious to ask him about his shot looks different based on what we've seen coming out of FIBA. I think that's really interesting. I think you want Delly to be healthy and kind of provide the defense and the non-need to handle the ball that they sort of need out of this guard rotation. I think that for me is just, if he can just be that guy and play some one and two, defend, kind of help bring and kind of help Garland and Sexton continue to grow as young guys, something that he is obviously, you know, was at one point and now is kind of in a vet, but still is going to put in that grind. I think that's the guy you kind of want because he just is something different than the other guys. I think the worst case is that he gets hurt and that, you know, even if you wanted to flip him, you just can't really do it. And he just kind of isn't a factor, right? I think he's had these injuries the last couple of years. He has been the same guy that he was, you know, he kind of peaked, I would say, when they won the title, frankly, at this point, before he got, when he got paid by Milwaukee. But that I think that is pretty straightforward. He's the guy that I just have the best read on of sort of what he is right now, but it's largely health dependent. And I am, again, really curious to see if the shot, which is less of that kind of it looks more fluid, I guess is the best way to put it, based on the video I've seen, if that holds up.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like his shot matters to him, but I don't know how much it matters to the Cavs. You know, I think the best case scenario for him is he is a, you know, nuisance to Colin and Darius in practice, like he was to Kyrie Irving, but he sort of challenges them to like get better. And, you know, maybe he, like you said, he plays his way, you know, in being flipped for anything at all. After, you know, really pushes Darius. But I think you're right. I mean, if he gets hurt, which has been, you know, where that's been the case, they don't get any of those benefits out of it. I think there is a scenario where he helps on the court, particularly, you know, it's, they're a guard heavy team, but, you know, if Sexton got hurt or if Garland had issues with his knee, you know, I've talked a lot about wanting guards that are like table setters because Sexton's not really that. Garland's not really that. Clarkson's definitely not that, right? Like, at least Delly sort of can get you into an offense and initiate it. So there's a possibility he's helpful out on the football – or on, not on the football field, on the basketball court.
I mean, I'm down for Delly playing strong safety for the Cleveland Browns. Like, let's just go. Let's go.
I don't know. I just was watching Rudy, and he's sort of the Rudy story. But I don't know. Best case scenario, he pushes Darius and Colin to get better in practice.
I think that's big, and I think he can be that. If he can be that guy, and if he can be sort of like that kind of leadership that I think is just kind of going to be missing from other spots, just based on what we sort of know from Delly and how he approaches this stuff, I think that's really going to matter. I'm curious to see. I wonder what Beeline's going to think of him too. I just like want to kind of know what his like view of Delly is and what he sort of thinks of his fit. Let's go on to Brandon Knight, just because I think he's the kind of, he's the other side of the coin of Delly. I'm going to pull up the numbers and just kind of look at the raw kind of fit numbers for him in Sexton last year as we're kind of talking here. But I just feel like the best case scenario for him is that he does just for him and the team, it's probably better if he's traded sooner rather than later. I think if he's around, you kind of want him to just be a three and shoot, like kind of an off guard more than anything else. You know, I don't think him playing a bunch is really going to help the young guys. I think there's a lot of redundancies with what we're kind of seeing with him and Sexton, for what it's worth. In 432 minutes last year, him and Sexton were a negative 13.2 points per 100 possessions. That's breaking news, really, really bad. I don't think they work. I don't think he works with Garland. I don't think you can play him as like a three guard guy. I think that's like the best case is he's just kind of out of the way in some way. And then I would say on the worst case is that he just plays a lot and it has a negative impact in some way on the young guys. I think he's just like a complicated figure in that regard.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I was kind of just like wrong. I sort of attributed some of Colin playing better Brandon Knight.
I think the offensive film bears that out. I can remember thinking games like, okay, like this, he provides a safety valve for Colin. You know, he's spotting up, he's willing to do that stuff. I think he's just such a negative on the defensive end and like wasn't trying that. And Colin was so bad already that it just makes those numbers stand out even worse. I think offensively, like I can get behind it. But I would just say like, if he's not going to try in defense, like it becomes a little bit trickier for me.
Well, that stuff with Colin just gets to just my view on, you know, young players and defense in general. Like, Colin was trying to prove that he wasn't, like, the worst rookie of all time, right? Like, he was trying to find any way to be a positive offensive player. Like, to also be asking him to try and figure out how to defend at the NBA level was just, you know, and again, it didn't matter because they weren't, you know, winning. You know, I mean, I think it just goes to what Beeline thinks and what the Cavs think. If if it seems like they think Knight can help, you know, some of the good guards or some of the young guards, you know, improve either on the court with them or just in the locker room, then you keep them, and that's sort of the best case scenario. But if not, then you don't. You have to flip them, or you know, and that's where things could get awkward, is if some of the veterans are bad, the team is bad, and there's no way to flip them because, you know, players, teams just don't want them. So that's kind of like an overarching fear that people might have.
That's an interesting kind of question, because I think we saw that last year to some degree, right? I mean, I think that some of the reported discontent in that locker room was the veterans under Ty, and then it kind of continued under Larry Drew, was those guys wanting to try and compete, trying to win. I think, you know, it seems like, even though, like, I think us from the outside all kind of didn't think they were really going to push for an ET, like, it seemed like those guys at least wanted to make a go at it. And then it was very clear early, once Kevin got hurt, once, you know, Ty got fired, all that, how things did just unravel a little bit in that regard. So I think that's kind of interesting. You know, I don't, like, the Cavs, like, John Beilein does not really have, like, an incentive to, like, give Brandon Knight a bunch of reps. Now, I empathize with Brandon Knight because, like, he, you know, he's never going to make $15 million again, but he is a free agent next summer. This is, like, probably not the best, like, showcase scenario for him. Like, if you want to look at other teams with guys like this, like, Jay Crowder, I think, is in a pretty good position in Memphis to, like, play until he gets flipped to a contender and stuff, and, like, make a name, make a case that he should get, like, some money next summer. I don't think that exists for Brandon Knight. So, like, how does that sort of impact things? I don't think he's going to be, like, a negative, but it is awkward. And, again, I think just – like, I think what Delly is, at least in terms of, like, our view of him, is at least that he fits a little bit better. I'm going to pull – Delly's concussion kind of taints some of what we sort of saw from him last year, but I'm going to pull up his numbers with Sexton. But, I mean, do you – I just feel like there's just one too many bodies here. And until, like, that sort of gets evened out, I don't really know what to make of just kind of how this is all organized.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we know. I mean, that it's a lot. It'd be a lot for any coach, especially because you have to get ready mentally for the fact that you're just probably not going to win a ton of games. And you have players like Kevin Love that are going to help. It's worth noting that, like, a lot, you know, like Brandon Knight, Matthew Dellavedova, these guys are not just playing for their next contract, they're playing to get another contract.
Yes.
And I mean, you've already got Jordan Clarkson, you know, people in the media writing articles, you know, for him to get.
This is two podcasts in a row, I think, we've brought this up, which is, yeah, like, very on brand for us.
It's just, there's guys that are going to have different agendas in that locker room. Especially when you're not winning, right? Like, if you're trying to win, then that sort of brings everyone together. But this team isn't really trying to do that. So this kind of goes back to my overall thought too, that, like, I think a lot of Cavs fans are excited about the season. They should be, because there's young talent. But it's hard for a 24-win team. Like, it's hard to have fun with a 24-win team, regardless of who's on it. So we'll see what happens.
Just a fun fact here. According to Basketball Reference, Matthew Dellavedova does not have Colin Sexton among his most common 10-man pairings last year. So two players that he spent more time on the floor with last season than Colin Sexton would be, one, Cameron Payne, and Jalen Jones. Like, that's how little data we sort of have on him and Sexton, which...
I learned, you know, this, you know, our pods are sort of like, you know, all of these players are sort of unanswered questions. And I think that I learned in the first, you know, in the LeBron-less period, you know, the Kyrie era, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, you know, we'd come into the season, well, you know, there are a bunch of question marks. Maybe they'll get some positive answers. And more, you know, how will Kyrie and Deion play together? You know, how's Tristan's jump shot coming along? You know, how will Anthony Bennett handle anything at all? And we very rarely got positive answers. So I think they have good people there, right? Like, even you don't hear anything bad about Jordan Clarkson. You don't hear anything bad about Brandon Knight. Kevin Love is great. Tristan Thompson's a hard worker. Colin Sexton's a hard worker. So it's interesting. I'm just not really conditioned to anticipate positive outcomes.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. Okay, so let's look at Jordan Clarkson. Look, he's like the best shot creator on the Cavs right now, right? Like, that's that unfair? Is that like am I discounting what Kevin Love can? I don't know. Like, I feel like if I'm saying I need someone to have to score in isolation from the top of the key via, like, with 8 seconds on the shot clock, like, I'm probably giving him the ball right now.
I mean, yeah, I mean, if it's like a meritocracy.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I'm saying, again, like, if you're going to say, like, okay, this, you're going to do this and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, you're still, like, just trying to get Sexton and Garland as many of those opportunities as possible. But, no, I mean, like, if there was, like, a one-on-one tournament that the team had, he would have a very good shot at winning, I guess. Yeah. Like, without, I'm not, like, thinking about it, but probably, right? Mm-hmm. Just through, like, strength, you know, he has an NBA, you know, fully developed, you know, he's in his physical prime. No, you're right, and that's pretty scary, I would say, but you're probably correct.
So that brings me to this sort of question. I think the best case scenario is that, like, he's really good
Hey, just let me get on the record. I think Kevin Love would probably find a way to win a one-on-one game against Clarkson, but
I agree. I would say Nance would probably have a good shot too because he's a good defender.
Yeah.
Okay. Regardless, I think if you're looking at Clarkson, and I don't know what this line is, and I kind of will be curious to maybe ask Beeline about this in some way at Media Day, but I think the best case for him and the franchise is, like, he's like good in a way where he's sort of more efficient, maybe is catching and shooting well, is at least, like, I don't expect anything from him in defense, but is maybe like a little bit better than last year, and is good enough where some team that is like trying to make a title run, make a playoff push, what have you, flips for him, gives up something, right? And in February, he's gone. But until then, he's productive in a way that does not take away from Sexton and Garland. I don't know what that looks like. I have a hard time envisioning that based on what we saw last year. Now, I don't want to say that, like, there was nothing positive about Sexton and Garland together last year, or Sexton and Clarkson together last year. I think there was some stuff. And I would say that Jordan Clarkson's best moments for me last year were things where he was kind of not attacking an ISO and was catching and shooting and doing some minimal kind of one or two dribble attacks off when he got the ball on a catch and shoot. But if you look at the overall season and you look at the overall amount of minutes played, his most common, he was Colin Sexton's third most common lineup pairing last year, and they were a -11 per 100 possessions. Now, that's better than Nance and Sexton. That's better than Osmond and Sexton. There's some limitations to what this data can tell us. Again, there were some good moments. But that amount of data and sort of what we know about both guys and what they're both sort of good at, unless Collins going to become like a really good catch and shoot guy and Clarkson's going to do that, and then throw Garland in the mix, I don't know how to walk that line. And that, like, that's why I think the worst case scenario for here is, like, he just becomes something that, like, really throws a wrench in what you're trying to build with Sexton and Garland, and he doesn't, like, adapt to what Beeline's probably going to want to do. And that, like, mars the Cavs season, not just in terms of how it's helping the guys develop, but it makes them harder to trade. And then you're in a situation where, like, you don't get anything back of return for him. And by God, like, don't sign him to a contract next year. I think regardless of how good he looks this year, I just can't imagine signing him to a contract makes any sense in the world.
I mean, I stopped predicting, trying to guess what the Cavs would do a long time ago, but
yeah, I have no idea. No one knows.
I'm 100% in agreement. John Beeline has his work cut out for him. And, you know, you know, we're going one through the roster. It's as simple as if Darius Garland looks like he has some star potential, this season is fine. You know, they're 3 or 4 years from contending. So even, you know, if they gave Jordan Clarkson a 4-year extension, would I be floored? Would I be, you know, would it blow my mind? Yes. But like, would it ultimately matter? I mean, I think you're right. Like and these are things that I've said, I don't think it would help Garland or Sexton's development, but I don't know. I guess I just don't want to think about it.
What do you use like a way that you can like imagine deploying Clarkson without like throwing a wrench in everything else they're doing?
I mean, I guess if you start Sexton and Garland and you sort of really force them to work it out together, then, you know, there's no real reason why, you know, Clarkson can't have his fun running the bench units. So that's probably the best way to do it. But I don't know, you know exactly what the plans are. I could see Beilein not wanting to start the two rookies together. Sexton's not a rookie anymore, but I could see him wanting to, you know, make Garland earn it, or, you know, say, hey, you know, I want to see Sexton, you know, do this off the bench. So I don't know exactly what it would look like. But, you know, it certainly would be, you know, staying as far away from Garland as possible if it was up to me.
Yeah, I agree. He's going to have to play with one of them, right? Like there's just no way he doesn't. You know, like that's sort of the thing here that I think is really interesting is that like there's just no way he's not going to have to play with one of the two young guards if he's going to play.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't know how to manage that. I just don't know if there's a good way to manage that.
It's you know, the Cavs are in some ways they're doing everything right. They're, you know, they're going to tank. They have young talent. They're going to give the young talent minutes. Are they putting everybody in the best possible, you know, situation to succeed? Not really. That's okay. I mean, on the whole, I think they're mostly putting themselves in good position.
Well, and I think Media Day will be really interesting too, just because there's like a lot of stuff to kind of sift through.
Yes. Yeah, there's no shortage of people to talk to.
And they haven't talked in months.
Correct.
Like, I don't think Beilein said anything of substance since his introductory press conference. Ditto for Kobe Altman. You know, we haven't heard from Kevin Porter Jr. You know, I mean, it's partially because of the trade, but there's a lot of stuff to ask. Let's go to Colin Sexton to wrap up this kind of first run through of these guys. I think for me, I feel much better about him right now than I did, obviously, in November. And I think I feel much more optimistic about what he is and could be come like the next 3 years than I did even in March. I think, you know, his shot and his confidence in his shot and his kind of willingness to make himself productive in that way, I think really stood out. I think, you know, he didn't benefit from not playing with Kevin very much last year. I don't think the offensive scheme did him any favors. I don't think it was very imaginative or really got him in situations where his kind of best stuff really came out. Like, we didn't really see his speed much last year. You know, his kind of we didn't really see him get to use his athleticism in any real way. I think he's going to be fine on offense. I think the catch and shoot stuff is going to be really interesting to see if that holds up from what it was last year. I think for me, it's all about, like, does he take another step forward on offense? Maybe the vision gets a little bit better and a little cleaner. In a better offensive system. I think that, like, how he looks and what we expect Beilein to do will sort of tell us a lot about Sexton, and how Beilein deploys him will be really interesting. The other thing is, like, he just needs to, like, be he's probably never going to be good defensively. Like, that would be a massive turnaround, but he can't be this bad. Like, and he's not like Trae Young, who's so special on offense that, like, and but also with what Atlanta is doing, Jonathan Sharks wrote about this really well at The Ringer this week. Atlanta is taking Trae Young, who's worse than Sexton according to DRPM last year, surrounding him with a bunch of switchable long defenders. The Cavs are not doing that with Sexton, and that just by virtue of roster construction means he has to be able to defend a little bit better. I think progress from that end of this year is going to be paramount to what he looks like and how reasonable it is for the Cavs to sort of lock him into any core they have going forward.
I guess I'm a little more optimistic about Colin defensively, although I certainly not this year, but, you know, in 2 and 3 years from now. I think he does have the frame to, you know, put on the strength. I think he does have the quickness to stay with ones and twos. So I don't know. I look at Trae Young, and I don't think they're just talking to Chase Young, who lives down in Atlanta. Not Chase Young, Chase Thomas. But, you know, he even said, you know, Trae Young does not have the body type that Colin Sexton does.
In no, terms absolutely not.
That natural strength. So I think that Colin can get to a point where, you know, he's a plus defender. I just, you know, we're not going to see it anytime soon.
So I wouldn't say that I'm like pessimistic necessarily. It's just like last year is so, the data and the film are just both so bad that like I don't think the scheme that they've run, I think there's a lot of things that do not support him. And I think we know that young players, especially young guards who are defending a bunch of pick and roll, need support. I just like don't know how to like divorce the idea that like he's definitely like should be in a better position to succeed this year in theory on that end versus how bad he was last year. I don't know how to like separate those two things, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, and I think this is where, like, you know, people think I hate young players, but I'm actually giving them, you know, space to grow and learn. Like, I just don't expect them to be able to do this stuff when they're 19 and 20 years old. And, you know, I think you're right. Like, you're looking on film for things that are going to, like, give you an indication that they can do it. I just see enough quickness, and it looks like his body can put on weight, you know. But maybe I'm wrong, you know. I don't know. We'll have to see.
Colin Sexton, drop the Instagram workout tape. We haven't got one. We got a Darius Garland one. Can we get the Colin Sexton one?
Yeah, just like we talked about. he looks good. I mean, it's what you want to see.
Yeah, no, you actually earnestly love to see it. So what for you is like, I've kind of outlined what I think is a successful year. What do you think is a successful year for Colin Sexton year two?
14 points a game, 54.5 true shooting rate, deferential when he needs to be to Garland. They get along. I think if somehow we survive the season with like those two, you know, still being friends, like Sexton looking like a real NBA player and also worth building around with Garland, I think a successful season.
I think that's fair. And I think the flip side of it is that, like, if they don't mesh, I don't know what the Cavs, like, I don't know. There's probably, like, a way for them to pivot. I don't know what that looks like. Like, what's the pivot from, like, if Sexton and him just, there's no data, there's no film that, like, shows that it works. Like, I don't know what the way to kind of pivot out of that is. Is it like you can't, like, it's a little early just to like let Sexton just kind of go or flip him or like whatever. I mean, theoretically you could, but like, what's the pivot if it doesn't work, you know?
Well, we'll figure that out next summer.
when they've had a press conference to be like, yes, we're friends.
Yeah, no, I think at that point it's just, you know, whoever the top, you know, lotto pick is, and hopefully it's not too late to, you know, flip them if they need to. But I'm not there yet, you know. Like I said, I think, like you said, you know, his February and March and April were impressive, and we'll hang on to that as long as we can.
What to you, to kind of wrap this up, would be what's like the skill you'd want to see Sexton be better at the most if it's not defense? Like, I think defense is just like a kind of an obvious one. Is there anything else that you'd be like, okay, like I can This is something
I want to see his new shot selection like continue. Like I don't want that to have been an aberration. Like if he can continue to shoot over 36% from three on the shot selection that he had for the last couple months, like he can be a helpful offensive player, I think. Because he does, I think he does have the athleticism. If he's making smart decisions with the basketball in terms of where he shoots from, I think that's important. So I want to see, like I said, like 54.5%, you know, true shooting, you know, get kind of close to the league average or a little bit above it, and take the right shots and continue to grow into making them.
I think that's right. And I think right behind that for me would 100% just be little bits of passing and little bits of creation that like show that even if he's not going to pass guys open or like average seven assists at his peak, that he can do it, right? Like I think if he can just move the ball and gets like boosted by what Beeline's offense is designed to do, that to me will be really encouraging. I do not think, again, the Cavs were like helping him last year. I don't think they were helping anyone with what they were running last year. What Beeline is supposed to do and supposed to be like good at, I think should help.
Agreed. Yeah, no, I think you're right. You want to start to see some vision as well.
Just little stuff. Run some pick and rolls with Kevin. I think that's kind of really all we're asking for.
Yeah.
David.
Agreed.
It's good to be back. It's good to be kind of, we're getting back in the flow. I kind of messed things up as we kind of got going back in. We're going to be back next week talking about a bunch of other Cavs, including Darius Garland. Any final thoughts before we get out of here today?
No, man. We'll talk soon.
All right, man. Have a good time in Chicago.
Thank you. See ya.
Bye.